I believe that better information leads to better decisions. And it's getting to that information in context, right? So if we're talking about better information, that is my DNA. And then I say, well, my DNA in the context of the goals that I'm trying to pursue, right? Because that's how you get unlocked. That's how you get unleashed, right? Is knowing where you want to go and knowing what you're starting with so you can be resourceful in your path and getting there. And recognizing that, quite literally, your path is unique because you are a unique human being. And you're worth knowing.
Yo, 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 it's your girl and boy CT. I'm Cindy Barnes.
And I'm Travis Barnes.
And we are the founders of the Overcomers Podcast.
The Overcomers Podcast is designed to help you overcome adversity and live your dreams. Every week we will be sharing stories of people who found their strength in their struggle. The Overcomers Podcast is sponsored by Journey 333. And that's a lot of threes, so let me tell you what it is. It's fitness, coaching, and nutrition. It is a place where we help you to look better, live better, and feel better. And it is mind, body, spirit. Today, we're going to help you get your mind right with our special guest.
Hello, Overcomer Nation. Are you ready for the future? Well, if you're ready for the future, then you're ready to hear from our special guest today. Our special guest is revolutionizing how we understand just how to utilize our genetic information for health, performance, personal growth. He's going from a transition from academic research to founding Athletigen, and now also DNA as a service and leading his business development at sequencing.com. Dr. Koenig, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Travis. It's an honor and a pleasure. You've been swinging for the fences for what is it now, like more than 10 years.
Yeah.
So I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. You know, I just feel like this modern health professional is being called to understand so much more. And I'm really excited for how you can help me and our listeners to understand more about our potential, about our DNA, about, you know, what the future holds for us for optimizing our health and performance. Because I think that we're going to say goodbye pretty soon to just measuring pounds and inches and, you know, body fat. I mean, we got to look at so much more because the science is there. And so if you could take us on your journey a little bit, just give us a little history that's kind of led you from the academic research that you've done to, you know, the multiple companies that you've been part of and just, you know, what it is that you're pioneering, you know, your inspiration, if you will.
Yeah. Well, how long do you have?
Right? I'm sure.
I'll give you the short version. Maybe before academia, it's important to note that, since the title of the podcast is Overcomers, I got into a pretty bad way youth age, say around 15, I left home and, for all intents and purposes, I don't know that I'd call myself a prodigy, but I definitely had potential in sport, potential in academia. But, you know, when things aren't right at home, kids feel that. And I felt that. And for a number of reasons, I left home when I was 15 and I fell in with the wrong crowd. And let's just say I've always been an entrepreneur, right? I was ahead of the marijuana market before it was legal. If you can believe it, I was homeless and I was living in this boat. Trailer actually, and the lady across the street, I mean, I guess she thought it was a good idea for a 15-year-old dropout to babysit her kids, which I think that was bizarre. Take it to the next level, she actually paid me in marijuana. And so I could sell at pennies on the dollar, but that came with some serious extra costs that I did not factor into the equation. So just growing up in Toronto, like kind of, you know, gangs stuff. So just got beat up, you know, and so I went into the boxing gym and I met these great coaches and before too long, I went in with, beat up face, bloody nose. And then all of a sudden I was coming in with bloody knuckles and,
They're like, oh, no, we can't have that. We got to keep this in the ring. And so I was really that focusing power with, you know, really the unusual suspects. These were all guys who had been through where I was going. You know what I mean? Like they, you know, they had troubled youth and trouble with the law. And anyway, they helped turn things around and you know, refocus me back on going back to school, for example. And so, you know, I had to make up all the courses that I didn't fail. I just, you know, I was smart enough to go to just the right amount of classes to pass, but it wasn't really making the grade to get into university. So I had to go and redo some classes. And, you know, amongst those was, you know, biology, genetics. And I happened to be, doing advanced biology to get my pre-university credits, et cetera. One of the projects was like, it was a genetic engineering project. Like it was very, you know, it was like with construction paper. And so you had to use your imagination, but you're literally, creating, cloning, synthetic organisms. And it was right around the time actually that, if you remember, Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson, their rematch, he bit off Evander Holyfield's ear. And it just happened that on the cover of Scientific America, there were pictures of these mice with, transgenic mice with human ears growing on them. So I don't know. It was just kind of this perfect storm of, wow, genetics is really cool. I like human performance. Maybe I'll marry those two passions. But of course, there was the other thing too, which was my mom was really sick. It was a reason for leaving home. And, you know, as much as things didn't work out, I'm a mama's boy at heart. And so, you know, I really took a deep interest in genetics. She had multiple sclerosis, which was, is affected by both environment and genetics. So I was presented with this conundrum of nature versus nurture, which I think is the wrong paradigm, but you get where I'm going, is like, how does this whole life thing work? So I was interested in performance, I was interested in philosophy, is interested in reducing suffering. And so that's really what led me to, you know, the genetics space in academia. And, you know, once I got into university, I traded in my boxing gloves for sprinting spikes. So I became a sprinter. I was studying genetics in the capacity of, you know, conventional health, let's just say, but also in cutting edge performance. And, you know, because there's not much room for error in sprinting. So I really wanted to know everything about the human body.
A good combination. You had the choice that you could either fight or run away really fast.
Well, smarter. You know, it's just run away, live to fight another day.
I was thinking, what a cool company. Or you could chase somebody down if you really wanted to get a hold of them. I suppose we could put it that way, too.
You go that way. Yeah. But, I did the whole academic route. If I think about it now, it's been, you know, it's a quarter century that I've been in the DNA space, if you can believe it. The first 15 years was really the academia, as you alluded to. And I really dived into topics like metagenomics, right? That's literally the DNA of everything. So DNA of the biosphere and ecosystems, but then also like ecosystems on your body, like the human microbiome and how that interfaces with your human genome. And you're really this holistic organism, this ecosystem, holobiont, if you will. Until that was really where a lot of my research centered. I always had that calling in like human performance sport. And so I actually left academia and I started a company called Athletigen to combine my two passions, athletics and genetics. And that was really neat because I got the chance to work with the highest performing humans on the planet. I looked into the molecules of tens of thousands of athletes, and, you know, just as important, or maybe even more important than that, is, you know, talk to all their coaches about, you know, how do you bring about a world-class performance? And so that's what like Athletigen allowed me to do, was, you know, see human performance in a whole new vein and bring to light tools that could help, you know, athletes, you know, at the tip of the spear, you know, help them, you know, understand injury, how to avoid it, understand that in terms of training, the menu's not the meal. You know, you can be very strategic about how to train, what you train, and when to train it. And then in terms of performance longevity, you know, looking at things like your nutrition, your metabolism for that sustained optimization. So yeah, that was really kind of the leap into industry away from academics. And you know, now I'm at this place where I'm working with sequencing.com where they've got this incredible technology stack. And they look at the whole genome. And so they've really cobbled together this whole wet lab quantification, streamlined process to sequence your whole genome, all 3 billion base pairs. Like most of the genetic companies out there, like they're sequencing maybe hundreds of thousands, but sequencing.com does, 3 billion base pairs. And we're looking at, 3 million of these variable sites. And with that information, you can really kind of start to adjust the rudder at different phases of your life and set yourself up for, an informed health span, so to speak, based on your individual DNA. So that's in a nutshell, how I went from, bruiser to academic and, back now to entrepreneur.
That's quite a journey, really impressive. And thank you for sharing that, because so often, when you get somebody that has doctor before their name, I think that quite often our listeners might assign a label that would disable them, right? Like you start to place somebody above you thinking that they've never gone through the things that you've been through. Mm-hmm. And you just shared with us that it's quite the contrary. You've had to face some adversities in your life to get to where you're at. In fact, they sometimes redirect our path in a very unique way, so maybe we wouldn't have got there any other way. Really cool. I wanted to go back a little bit because you talked about, well, first, let me ask you this. At Athletigen, you developed some really cool tools. What would you say that you're most proud of during your time at Athletigen as far as just, how you're able to affect the performance with the tools and whatnot?
Yeah, it was a really cool time. It was, I founded that company, and you can believe it was 10 years ago, 2014. And it was really it was so far ahead of its time, because we combined, we didn't just look at DNA, right? We combined all the aspects of athlete training. For example, we would look at things like, the athlete's training load and their rate of perceived exertion and their resting heart rate and their soreness, and like the full gauntlet of how they're responding in the context of their DNA. And we built that into a comprehensive application that put genetics and environmental tracking into a single app. Now that's before that's like before all these health apps, if you can think about it, in that context. Like now you're kind of inundated with them all, and I'm not quite sure what they're doing. There's been a few trackers that I've used, but I certainly wouldn't set my life to them. But this was really like a neat solution that not only could the athlete see, how they were responding to training, but they could see that in the context of their genetics, and their coaches could see that in the context of their genetics. So, for example, you'd start to see things like, athletes who don't absorb vitamin B6 well, for example, would, suffer more diminished mood in instances of higher training load. Athletes who didn't absorb iron as well wouldn't, iron and B12 wouldn't, who were doing altitude training, wouldn't adapt as well as other athletes. Athletes who, you could look at something like as seemingly homogeneous as two sprinters doing the 100 meters, right? And you'd see just by the way that, one athlete responds to weight training versus another, it's like, wow, this is a, pure speed power athlete, that you're definitely going to want in the blocks, and they have no problem getting under like a 400 or 500 pound squat rack. But then you got this guy who's like a gazelle, and his upright running is insane, and he's clearly going to be the anchor, but he doesn't respond well to weight training. He's much more of a plyometric athlete. So you started to really empower coaches to be, moving away from this whole drill sergeant era of no pain, no gain, and move into this, call it a gardener, type of nurturer. And so, You know, I think there was like the tip of the spear that was really interesting, but then there were also like exposing injury vulnerabilities for what they were and being like, okay, well, you know, not everybody needs the same level of stress to get the desired training spot training response, which by the way is a performance. And you know, we were dealing with track and field athletes, so it's like a performance for a few months out of every year, and especially on the fourth year. And so you know, you're really flirting with injury every day you go out there, and you know, that's kind of the key metric, is to show up uninjured. But you know, it sounds obvious, but you know, athletes, they're raised under this expectation that, you know, it's no pain, no gain. And it's like, well, actually, if you push yourself too hard, you're more likely to get an Achilles tendon rupture or a labral tear. And so, you know, actually a good workout for you is prehab and technique and an extra massage session or a pool workout, and that counts, right? And so I think starting to see individual athletes be seen as individuals and take personal responsibility over their individuality. So it's not about genetics, apologetics. Oh, well, I'm too injured or too predisposed to injury, so poor me. It's like, no, well, here's how I'm going to approach that. So I think what was really rewarding was seeing how empowered people were.
Yeah. To being smarter instead of just harder, right? I mean, that is really what you were allowing people to do, to see what would be the best methodology for them to reduce the likelihood of injury and optimize the result, you know, as opposed to just thinking it's just always, you know, how's the old saying go? To a hammer, everything looks like a nail. To the old drill sergeant coach, everything looks like this is what you should do for everybody. But, you know, providing more information and insight to that, that's really, really good.
Yeah. Well, you know, and just to, you know, kind of pull on that thread there, because you said, what's the most rewarding thing? And this goes back to actually something that you said at the top of the call, which is, you know, usually when people hear, you know, the word doctor in front of your name, you know, there's certain things that they may think they can't possibly know. And I think something like our DNA, to see more and more people accessing it and understanding it, I mean, to me, that is extremely rewarding. You know, I envision a day where, well, and it's already happening. It's true. Like for my daughter, for example, it's like, I'm sequenced, my wife is sequenced, our daughter is sequenced, and we can start to make decisions, you know, about things like, well, food optimization and drug allergies and, you know, even, you know, rare disease. You know, are we carriers for things? So that, the fact that becomes more, is becoming more mainstream, I think what you're going to see is, you know, people empowered to take that personal responsibility over, of their individual biology.
Well, doctor, if you would, help us understand what that means, that you're all sequenced. Help our listeners.
Yeah, I'm all sequenced, yeah. Yeah, so what I mean by that is, so in our genomes, there's, you know, for better or worse, there's around 3 million variable sites. And so these are mutations that have just happened spontaneously throughout the evolution of our species. And, you know, most of them they're okay, right? They're the differences in our eye color, our hair color, our height. Now, of course, a lot of these things can be influenced by environmental factors as well. But, you know, generally speaking, there is that, you know, confluence of your genetics and your environment. And so, when you start to consider that, okay, well, this minor point mutation has persisted in the population, so it can't be, it's not detrimental. Well, you know, if it's your, you know, if it's a food intolerance, for example, like lactose intolerance, it's like, well, that could actually become life threatening if, you know, milk is your water source in the desert, as an example, right? So that's what I mean is like there are little subtle changes in the environment where, knowing them for information about your biology, helps you, cut to the chase a lot sooner. And so, in particular, there are obviously much more, severe markers to consider. So actually now it's February, it's Rare Disease Month. One of the things that I'm doing in sequencing is forming partnerships with different organizations who are raising awareness for rare disease. One of them, for example, is United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation. And that mitochondrial disease has, many point mutations that might lead to that, that outcome, both in the mitochondrial genome and in the human genome. And so, until now, even just getting a diagnosis was near impossible. So imagine walking around with dis-ease and, being told it's all in your head. So I think, where we are now, there's kind of the extreme where it's like, hey, I can, understand if I have a chronic disease that might manifest and I might take steps to get treatments or avoid, that disease from manifesting in the first place, even as something is more, let's say, permanent. So like, for example, I'm a carrier of, congenital hearing loss. And so my concern was, well, if my wife is also, then is our daughter, potentially is she deaf? And so like, those are questions that we can order early, in life. And, thankfully she's not, but, if she was, then that's when you would pursue, technological interventions like hearing aids. So your child doesn't, miss out on that stage of social development through sound, for example. And so, yeah, there's drug allergies, for example. So like knowing that information a priori, can be life-saving, which is really quite amazing. And so, I'm obviously very, I'm an early adopter because I've studied genetics. But there's, more and more people are starting to, more and more parents are starting to be open to the fact that, hey, knowing more about, my child's genes is going to help me be a better parent. So I think when you ask the question, we're fully sequenced. Well, my genome sequence, Kristen's genome sequence, and our daughter's, genome is sequenced as well. And so when we go into our, meetings with our GPs or our pediatricians, that just becomes part of the conversation now.
Yeah, very cool. And how does somebody go about getting sequenced? Because it sounds like, you open yourself up to knowing what your vulnerabilities are and, your potential risks are and how you can influence those in at least a positive or preventative way. So those are very important things. How does somebody go about that?
Yeah, so my wife and I used sequencing.com. And, the reason we did that is because, I work there.
Right.
So I know how the company works. I know the founder. Founder's a medical geneticist, right? He was actually he had his own rare genetic disease and he wanted to end his own diagnostic odyssey. So the company was founded on great principles and the data is yours forever. It's not like other companies, social media companies, other DNA companies that actually sell your data without you knowing. This is really, kind of your, personal secure portal for your DNA. So you literally just navigate to sequencing.com and, you can get your whole genome sequence for $399 in, less than 12 weeks, which is pretty amazing because if you think about when the human genome was first sequenced, it was $3 billion and probably like 12 years or more. So we've really kind of come down in speed and cost.
And the process to it though is like, is there a blood work?
It's really real simple. So yeah, you order the kit online, it comes in your mail, and it's actually a swab test, cheek swab. It's less invasive than the COVID test, if you remember that.
Yeah, all the way up the nose to the back of the brain or whatever,
just a nice gentle swab and then you put it back in the envelope, goes into the drop ship that's included. And then, you know, in 12 weeks, you've got your full DNA results. And I should say they have a whole app marketplace of, you know, different ways of analyzing your data. So if you're an athlete, you can look at the injury predisposition genes or the training response genes, or, you know, if you want to optimize your nutrition, you can do that based on the different nutrigenomics reports. Different supplements are recommended as a result. And yeah, you can really start to fuel your body and, you know, take on the behavioral changes that lead to the best expression of yourself.
The best expression. You know, we've talked a little bit about environmental factors, and I couldn't help but think about epigenetics and, you know, which is the influence of the genes, right? I mean, you're the better one to define it than me. But that being said, how much do you focus on that when you now have this available information to say, well, I'm predisposed to this, or, you know, this is a risk for me, and, you know, whether or not it gets expressed has to do a bit with how I influence it, right? So is that essentially, you know, what you're doing is you take that information and you try to create an optimal environment for the best expression of yourself? Or
that's exactly right. So you think about it, like one of the things you might learn about yourself, again, using the sports analogy, is you may learn that you have an increased risk of an Achilles tendon rupture, for example. Say, okay, well, what if I'm a triple jumper? You know, so, you know, how do I train now that I know that information, right? And so there's, you know, certain things that you're obviously gonna, I mean, you probably might say you should be on top of this already, but let's just accept that, well, the environment, your genes are less forgiving, let's say, to the environment that you've chosen. And so if you choose to persist into that, well, you do so and you proceed with caution. But, you know, maybe you start to think about, you know, more of an anti-inflammatory diet, a recovery diet. Maybe there's less training volume. Maybe there's less training density and less training load compared to others. Maybe you're hypersensitive about how much muscle mass you have around that area. You're super diligent on your weight gain, and you're conscientious of the different surfaces that you're on, and your warm-up that you're doing, and the cooling down that you're doing. Now, keep in mind, like, we're talking about, you know, sharpening the tip of the spear. So, okay, that's just a tissue example. But, you know, another example might be, well, I'm a slow metabolizer of caffeine. And so, well, that affects how, you know, how I ingest that food, right? I'm not going to have caffeine, you know, me personally, after 10 or 12 p.m. at the latest, you know, because that's going to mess with my sleep cycles over time. So yeah, there's a limitless, there's literally hundreds or thousands of things that you can learn about yourself and make subtle, adjustments along the way. And, you know, you might say that seems overwhelming, but it's really not when you think about, you know, spreading that over, let's call it decades of your life of good decision-making. I mean, that's just a great habit to get into anyway, is data-based decision-making. And, you know, let's consider the alternative. I mean, the alternative is that you ignore those things. And then what we get into is like, well, death by 1,000 paper cuts, and that's not fun. So,
much better. You know, it was a few years back where I discovered a company that would base their supplement recommendations on my blood work, which I thought, well, that's great compared to just taking a supplement because a friend was taking it. Like, you know, what do I need? You know, like, do I need more vitamin T or whatever? Like, you know, let's see what's going on. And this is what we're talking about. Rather than having your decisions be random, having them be grounded in facts that you can learn about yourself. I'm curious, this DNA as a service, this DAS that's, you know, going on through sequencing.com, says that the potential of the genetic insights can, you know, transform both healthcare and personal development. So, of course, it can transform perhaps, you know, how we're treating people's health. And when you say personal development, Are we talking about just your way to quarterback your own health? Is that what we're looking to do here with it, or does it go deeper than that?
Well, I think it can be both of those things. I mean, so I think you kind of look at it as, like, say, like the Eisenhower matrix, right? Where you've got your urgent critical is like Q1, and your second quadrant is non-urgent but still critical all the same. And then the other things might just be urgent but not critical, and then the fourth quadrant is not urgent, not critical. So when I think about things that I want to do to move myself closer to an end game or a goal, certainly my health has to be there, right? And there's always going to be a critical and urgent, let's call it task that needs to be addressed. What kind of emergencies fill up your life? And it's like, well, what fills up your urgent critical has a lot to do with, what you do in your quadrant two, your non-urgent critical. So what I mean by that is if you're not taking proactive steps towards taking care of your health, you're gonna manifest the urgent critical that you don't like. I mean, a real simple example is if you don't floss your teeth and go to the dentist, you can expect to have cavities, and then you're getting a teeth pulled or root canal, and that has to happen now. So it's the same kind of thing with your health. Is if you know all these things about yourself biologically, you can set up the environment that's going to bring that expression of yourself. And so I use the athletics side because it's really it's really just so obvious. So I take, for example, like, if I want to be the best decathlete in the world, and keep in mind I'm competing against other decathletes, and the best, well, who wins in terms of best decathlete, and what's it based on? It's like, well, it's the athlete who wins. The athlete who wins scores the most points. And he's like, well, does the athlete who wins, do they always win the 100 meters? Or do they always win the pole vault? Do they always win this? No, what they do is they learn what they are innately good at, and they train their strengths, and then they manage their weaknesses, right?
Mm-hmm. Good analogy.
Yeah, and so, like, in the decathlon, it's like, okay, well, I'm maximizing my potential to get this score, right, as measured by these seven events. And so look at the decathlon of your life, right, and ask yourself what you want the sum total of that life to look like. And then take a look at the ingredients. It's like, well, these are all the tools that I have. And by the way, my body and my biology is one of those tools. And so what things might I bring together, to optimize myself? Cause that's a psychological thing that can happen as well. Cause, like, I'll share this with you. This is interesting. One of our partnerships was with, Skullcandy, the headphones company.
Yes.
Yeah. They were doing like a human performance of sound lab with their X Factor app, which was really cool. And so, as I said, we had a partnership with them. I mean, they were trying to do with sound and headphones what Red Bull did with energy drinks. But it was really kind of the more the marketing thing. So they did a lot of really cool human performance research as part of their marketing. So they had these labs. Anyway, one of the things we looked at was, different genes involved in, call it psychology, at least as it relates to, how we metabolize different neurotransmitters. And there's this one gene that comes up, and it's called the COMT gene. And in some of the different reports out there, what you'll see is it's referred to as the warrior versus the worrier gene, right? And interestingly, you find like a worrier, they're more analytical. And let me say it this way: it doesn't take a lot for them to bring intensity to practice. You know who I'm talking about. There are these athletes who train hard, but don't necessarily compete well. They're the ones that will
tend to crack under pressure, unless they, if they don't have some kind of sports psychology training or management. So the interesting thing is, when we were working with Skullcandy, we found that the athletes who were the worriers, and so the warriors, I should have said also, is that the warriors seem to just stress pulls it out of them. You know, you ever see those athletes that show up on race day and you're like, where was that in practice? Or show up on game day and you're like, why can't you do that in practice? Like, because it's practice, man. It's, you know?
Right, right.
But anyway, so yeah, that warrior thread, it actually, you know, there was a soft correlation there with music, right? So if I was a worrier, I was predisposed to maybe be more anxious, let's say, in competition, my correlation there was, well, I tended to listen to more like classical music. Versus a warrior is like, yeah, I want the beats, you know, I want the bass. So just knowing that about yourself, like knowing that, hey, I have a tendency to be more worrier, let's say, that might affect how I wind down my day. That might affect the kind of meditation or prayer that I actively pursue if I want to be a good dad or a good husband, which is true for me, by the way. I'm that like hyper analytical worrier type.
Right.
And so you got to kind of just like, you know that about yourself. You look for ways to bring that intensity down, right?
Know thyself, right? The beginning of true wisdom, and then to heal thyself, right? I mean, these are the things we're talking about. That being said, your work, I'm sure, can get pretty controversial. Because there's some people that are probably listening to it right now, listening to this podcast, and they're saying, yeah, but I mean, like, am I playing God? Am I messing with, you know, my destiny? You know, like those kind of things. Like, how much of that do you hear with the work that you do?
Well, I mean, typically I don't hear much about that at all, because people who come to me have already decided they want to know their DNA.
Sure.
But it's a valid point. I mean, I think that, how does the saying go? Is well, first of all, what do you mean by when you ask, you know, if the question is about playing God, it's, well, people often say, well, do you believe in God as a scientist? And you say, what do you mean by, well, first of all, what do you even mean by me? And then what do you mean by believe? And then what do you mean by God? So, I mean, if we could answer those questions, then I could answer the question that you asked, right? Because those are very, very deep philosophical questions. But let's see if we can make it simple. I really liked an answer that a physician gave me recently. When you say, well, some people might say, well, I just don't want to know. And that's like, you're totally your choice. Like, I would never impose knowing, something that somebody doesn't want to know. I mean, it's your choice. I mean, especially it's your body. And, you know, there are things like, for example, like Huntington's disease. It's like, well, what if you have that? There's really nothing you can do. That's it. Now I know, basically down to like a few months, years, let's say, that when I'm going to die. But then it's like, well, what if I have late onset Alzheimer's disease predispositions? Well, I can do some things about that. You know, what if I have, cardiovascular predispositions for cardiovascular diseases, or type 2 diabetes, or, again, food allergies or drug allergies. It's like, well, if I know that information, I can like make proactive choices. And so the thing that was said was something, like the leading cause of death is denial.
Mm.
So, I mean, once an individual has a diagnosis, the leading cause of their imminent death is denial.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's not quite exactly the same thing, right? But it's like, well, you know, hey, there's like thousands of predispositions that you might have. And, you know, with investing a little bit of time into learning about yourself and you know, getting in touch with the right experts. I mean, you can get yourself on a critical path that maybe adds 10, 20, 30 years to your life. Like, I don't know. Do you want to meet your grandkids? I do. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. I had to bring that part up because now where I'm about to go is where, you know, I would say people that are, you know, my parents' age, well, even some people my age are a little put off by it. I guess a little resistant against it. But I mean, AI is coming on strong, right? And so there's going to be this information taken and AI, you know, which, you know, can know everything that's available to be known and processed. Whereas, you know, we got humans that know what they've learned and then they process the information. So how will AI, you know, play a role in like when someone is sequenced and, you know, providing recommendations, like how does that work together?
Oh yeah. I mean, like I set it up now that I can, you know, take a subset of my DNA results and I can have a conversation with, you know, with the AI about my DNA, right? Which is like much more functional in terms of, well, making it actionable. So I can say, for example, take a look at all my 100 plus nutrition genes and, you know, build me a meal plan and a shopping list of all the foods, all the superfoods for me. And it's like, boom, there's my DNA-based meal plan, right? That knows I'm sensitive to caffeine, knows I'm lactose intolerant, knows I'm sensitive to gluten. It's just like, that's pretty cool. Like,
yeah, that's
so
awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
out of seconds, like in seconds, you have that info.
Yeah, and it's actionable, and it's like I don't need to know all the jargon. I don't need to know what a single nucleotide polymorphism is, and what the RSID is, and what's the confidence level with this. And no, I mean, I've gone ahead and acted like the AI is perfect, and it's not perfect. It still makes mistakes or hallucinates, as they say. So, and you know it depends in to a great extent on the background that you're pulling from, right? So I mean, these are basically language generative results that are trained on language models that, you know, let's just say if I have peer reviewed journals as my input source versus what's on Reddit as my training algorithm, my results are going to be better, right? So I think with AI, what's important is still the questions. So it's like, you know, they call them the prompts. Like, what are your prompts? If you go on anything on LinkedIn nowadays, it seems that there's like people with the best package of prompts. And I think these prompts are really just, they're good questions. And so to me, it seems that one of the most important things we can do is get good at asking questions and get good at developing a personal philosophy. And so that means, you know, ironically, going back to the basics and becoming a part of this, like, you know, great conversation that's been going on, at least in the West, for the last 3,000 years, in terms of, you know, talking about these big questions, you know, in terms of who and what human beings are, so that you can ask more beautiful questions. So I think you're going to need experts, at least in this kind of call it transition phase of implementing AI to like really train the algorithms, and you train the algorithms by asking the right questions. And then again, that presumes that the database of answers is trained on the right data. So I think there's like a fair amount of supervision that needs to happen there. But I think, at some levels, you're starting to read that, you know, these different chatbots are out competing different physicians at their diagnoses. And so that's fine. I mean, that's, you know, Google Maps is better at choosing my ideal route from where I am now that if I was to you know, go based on memory, or if I was to travel cross country with a physical map, like Google Maps beat me, right? So,
absolutely.
I'm okay with that. But you know, I think it does require that, you know, people start to get okay with, you know, more and more. It's like a black box. You ask people, well, how does Google Maps work? And it's, I don't know. It just kind of does. Like, no, it's connected to this global network of real time data, you know, stitched together by satellites that knows where everybody is, and so can give you the faster route that can save you 2 or 3 minutes and get you to your doctor's appointment on time, or give you like the, you know, the fastest route, you know, for the ambulance as a result. So yeah, so I think it's exciting, but you know, there's always the, you know, there's the intended benefits, and then there's the unintended consequences, and so I think we're navigating that now.
Yeah. I have to ask this question, just for a personal note. I know that you've helped a lot with athletic performance and, you know, professional development and, you know, personal care. Where do you see the modern fitness center 20 years from now, or maybe even closer, maybe just a few years from now, 5 or 10, based on new information? Because I think that we've really been on this progressive thing to where, you know, I guess if we can just do a little history, right? You know, we've gone from, you know, Jack LaLanne to Arnold Schwarzenegger and deciding, well, maybe we shouldn't do just bodybuilding workouts. Maybe we should do functional fitness. And we learned better through functional movement, how to exercise, but we still focused on body fat and inches, and which is a great thing to focus on because they're health indicators. But now we're moving into this time where we can know so much about ourselves. You know, we're focusing on longevity because the science is there to help us live longer. What do you think that we're going to be experiencing when in the near future, when somebody's walking into the most advanced fitness center, you know, how are they helping people?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is a way I frame it to the entrepreneurs I coach. So I'll spend time with like a choice few entrepreneurs every year. Like I'll coach, let's just say, you know, 12 is my limit. And I find if I go over 12, the individual attention that I can give them gets diminished. So I work with, you know, select few entrepreneurs who, like, I'm really passionate about their vision and you know, I see helping them as a way to scale, you know, my own work. And you know, like being an entrepreneur is it's lonely. So having someone in your corner is like, you know, think about it like a boxing coach, like someone in your corner is kind of cool. And better yet, somebody who knows you, is kind of cool. And so one of the things that I frame my program is as such. And so there's a biology element of it. There's a mindset, and then there's a, you know, a strategic planning component of it. And the more that I've coached from that paradigm, I kind of look at it as like three, you know, overlapping, you know, circles, like a Trinity or Venn diagram of those three things. And so you're always kind of working a little bit on your biology and a little bit on your psychology, and, you know, that's going to influence, you know, your plan, and, you know, hopefully, you know, where you're going, and you're adjusting that based on all the learnings every day. But, you know, one of the things at the center is it needs to be from time to time, your biology. So if I think about the future of these gyms, or maybe they won't even be gyms in the future, but I think they could be something else. I think it's like, you know how some people may go into the bank to manage their investment portfolio, right? Because if you think about money, like, well, what is money? Is money is stored potential, right? It's work you've done, and this excess value that you've created, you have it stored in this currency that we call money. And the more of it that you have, then, you know, the more that you can do, or you can give, or you can, you know, leave to your family, et cetera. And so it's stored potential. And I kind of look at our biology in that way. I think we're going to start to, you know, see people manage their health as stored potential, right? And so you can start to see, based on various metrics, like I can predict my health span. And so, you know, we're starting to see some of these markers emerge, you know, in terms of how it's telomere length or epigenetic profiles. And, you know, then there are the other metrics that aren't going to go away, like, you know, your resting heart rate or heart rate decay or heart rate variability is an interesting one. But, the movement side of it as well, I think movement versatility is critical. So like being able to move through all the, you know, planes of human mobility, I think is a good predictor of long-term health. But I think the point is you're going to go to a facility like this. And I think if your gym owners really want to keep gym members, then you've got to have something analogous to, you know, what people are already used to doing with, for example, their cars, right? It's like, oh, I have my 10,000 miles check in, right? And we already see this happening at like, at these, like concierge medicine or executive, retreats or clinics, let's say. I think all those things are going to become much more affordable, right? So anything that you want to measure, you can get measured. Now the question is like, how much of it can we act upon? So I kind of see it as, you know, there'll be like a weekly check-in with your coach. I use these three things. So what do I use? I mean, how much time did you spend on things that were important but not critical? So that's really me asking you, how much are you thinking about the future, right? And if your hair's on fire all the time, I mean, there's something going on there. We got to talk, right? And then the other question is how hard did you work? And it's all real simple, like I use scale 1 to 5, and I like people to answer 3. Like on average, I want to see answer 3. That's the Goldilocks effect, right in the middle, right? So I ask them, you know, how much time did you spend on, you know, critical but non-urgent things? You know, I like just right in the middle, just right is what I like to see. And then how did you sleep? Slept just right. And then how hard did you work? I worked just right. I find anytime any one of those things are off, I can predict what's going on. You know, like if work was too hard, it's like, well, you haven't been planning about the future, you know, or is it your sleep that's throwing that off, right? So you can have this really interesting conversation about, you know, what's going on in a, call it a performer's life, just with those three simple questions. But then, you know, that's your weekly check-in. And then, you know, maybe monthly, you know, I think monthly it's really hard to do anything significant with respect to like, bloods, but you know, maybe you check in your weight and your heart rate stuff monthly, but then, you know, you do a deeper dive every quarter. So I've done this for myself where I've looked at, I mean, I don't even know how many metrics it was now, for about 300 different metrics. And I built this kind of roll up score for myself just to go through the exercise. And so I think that even just going through the exercise of, you know, measuring these different things, basically, you know, your full body MRI and, your bloods every quarter and all of your digital tracking. And I mean, it's interesting, but it can become overkill, right? So I don't know what the simple answer is. I've kind of talked around a bunch of things that I've experienced, but I think the key is the longitudinal data. So just making a point to start building your health records now. And actually, because you know, there are these tools that have come out, like the amalgamation of your electronic health records, I think that's something else to seriously look about, is just to start compiling all of your health history. Initially, I think that's the first move. So you think people, you know, 30, probably 40, people who are 40, they start to think more about their mortality. I think the first step for those people is like collect all your health records and just look at the trend. And then, you know, you're looking at it reactively. So now just start to proactively, what do you want that to be? and then start to manage that up in the future. So I don't know. I don't know if that answered your question. That was kind of.
That's really good. I mean, because ultimately, it really does come down to more and more customization and exactly what you talked about in the beginning of the show when we were talking about Athletigen, which is, you know, providing tools for people to understand their vulnerabilities and where they may be overtraining or what the case might be. So the more information that we could compile, the future is, as AI gets better, thanks to people like yourself, and analyze, I can say, what's the top five things I should do based on all this sequencing and information, right?
Yeah.
So if we wanted people to get a message from today's show, and, you know, I've definitely, you know, we got the title, which is, you know, Unleashing Human Potential Through Genetics and Innovation. What are the action steps that I should take knowing, I think as a listener, it's quite possible that I didn't even know that this was available to me, that I could get out there to sequencing.com, that I could have the swabs, that I can understand this stuff, that I could create a better environment for myself. What action steps should people get from today's show so that they can take better care of their health?
Yeah, I mean, again, I am biased on the DNA sequencing side of things. I believe that better information leads to better decisions. And I think that that is effectively the message of today, is that better information leads to better decisions. And it's getting to that information in context, right? So if we're talking about better information, that is my DNA. Then I say, well, my DNA in the context of the goals that I'm trying to pursue, right? Because that's how you get unlocked. That's how you get unleashed, right? Is you know, knowing where you want to go and knowing what you're starting with, so you can be resourceful in your path and getting there, and recognizing that, well, you know, quite literally, your path is unique because you are a unique human being, and you're worth knowing. So I'll finish with that.
Well, that's really good. I'm going to ask you to go one step further. The goals that you're trying to pursue could be athletic. They could be personal health goals, or it sounds like there could even be an optimal business performance that, you know, like some there's you're mentioning coaching people, coaching entrepreneurs. And so we could even use this information to just perform better as an entrepreneur. Would that be true?
Yeah, well, 100%. What I've learned about the entrepreneurs that I work with is they very much have an athlete mindset. And so what does that mean is they have this tendency to, you know, overreach, to want to learn, to have that growth mindset, right? And so that's a, you know, it's, you know, a reach and stretching out and retracting. So, you know, you're always kind of, you know, flirting with injury and burnout. And so, you know, optimizing your, you know, how you manage your energy is effectively what knowing your genes can help you with.
That's awesome. Well, Dr. Koenig, you know, you have a podcast coming up this quarter. All right. And that's going to be called.
You know, it's just simple. It's just the Jeremy Koenig Show.
Terrific. Yeah, that's great. So that people can come and they can learn and get even more from you and, of course, your guests. And if people want to follow you, learn from you, engage with you, where do they go now?
I've just actually launched my website. It's drjeremykoenig.com. And basically all my handles are the same, on YouTube and Twitter or X, Instagram. And that's where you can find me, just at Dr. Jeremy Koenig.
Right. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for the work that you're doing. It's really exciting. And I just really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Travis. It's been a great time. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, Overcoming Nation. Make sure if you haven't already, give us a 5-star rating. Make sure that you share this and subscribe so you can see all of our future content.
That's right. And if you'd like to be a guest on a future show, go to overcomers-podcast.com. If you're interested in our franchise opportunities with Journey 333, then go to www.journeyfitness333.com. And finally, if you like what you heard today and you feel like you're somebody that needs a bit more coaching, go to travisbarnes.com. Yeah, overcoming!